Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 2nd, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm an absolutely giddy Scott Long. Giddy with a capital G.
Can we call you P. Giddy?
He giddy. I love it. Absolutely. Let's do that.
I know why you're giddy, too.
That's right. By the time people are hearing this show, we have real poker here in Florida. It's been a long time coming, buddy.
It has. And it still doesn't feel like it's going to happen. It's just weird. It's weird to know that I can walk into a poker room now, 5 minutes from my house, and say, yeah, I'm going to buy in for $1,000. Yeah, it'll never happen. But I can do it. That's the beauty of it.
But the fact that you can do it is what matters.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Come on down, everybody. We're waiting for you.
You know, and that's the funny thing, and you and I have talked about this before, too, but I did an interview with the Miami Herald this week about the laws changing on July 1st here in Florida. And I think I made the reporter kind of like go, huh? What? When I said that after the limits change, when you walk into any of the rooms here in Florida, most games you're going to see are still going to be the 1-2 no limits and the low limit games, whether it's 2-4, 3-6, 4-8, or something like that. So, you know, while it's all exciting that we can do all this stuff and that stuff's going to happen, it's not like, you know, you're going to walk in your poker room and you're going to have to play 20-40 limit. You know, it's just not going to be that.
Right.
But it's going to be all that it has been, but better.
Absolutely.
Kind of like a whole new improved, laundry detergent.
You know, I mean, and we've seen it ourselves when we go to Vegas, when we go to Tunica and Biloxi. You know, you go there and it's like, yeah, there's still just a 1-3 game and a 4-8 game going here, and these guys could do whatever they want. So, you know, of course that's going to happen here, but the excitement of it and everything, and knowing that you can have real $8 bets and real $10 bets, you know, in limit games, and there are a possibility of a 15-30 game spreading. And you know, what I think is going to be exciting, too, is like the buzz, hearing people say, oh my God, you see West Palm Beach, they got like a 40-80 game going, you know, whatever, you know, and yeah, it's going every night strong, and I can't believe it's happening, and well, they're spreading stud 8 at Derby Lane, or, you know, whatever it's going to be. That's going to be exciting, too, just finding out where the games are, what's actually surviving and thriving and going and seeing it firsthand, and who comes out of the woodwork. It's going to be real cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about, and the fact that it's taken this long, it just, you know, it's... You know, I loved, like, studying government when I was a kid, and now that I'm an adult, I hate it. It's just so frustrating, but I know everybody's excited. You know, the poker room managers are calling us. They're getting real excited. All kinds of press releases going out. Obviously, we're taping the show in advance, but I'm planning to head out and check out the action around the Tampa Bay rooms and see what's going on, and I have some other folks are going to let us know here at Annie Up what's going on. So hopefully we'll have some stuff on our website or our Facebook page or our Twitter account or something like that to let people know, because this first week is going to be kind of crazy because it's also July 4th weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And I unfortunately will be not here. Not unfortunate, but it's fortunate because I'm going to be in Vegas. But I won't be here to actually code on the actual weekend that it goes. I'm getting ready for my trip out there, and I leave on the 4th. So I'll have to let you tell me what happens. And it's funny. Every time I go to Vegas, it's like something significant is happening back in Florida and poker. I've got terrible timing.
But yeah, so it should be exciting. And if any of our listeners out there have played, you know, let us know what's going on so we can keep in touch with all the great stuff that's happening around the state.
Absolutely.
And, you know, leading up to this, Chris, obviously, you know, I usually go to a local poker room and proof our magazine pages for our issue, you know. And so I went last week, and I got there, and I'm like, you know what? This is silly. I don't have to play this poker right now. I can wait till July 1st and come in here and play, sit here and just relax and grind away to a 4-8 game. If I get frisky, I can play, you know, an 8-16 or 10-20 game. You know what? I'm just going to say hi to some friends and go home. So what I've been doing the last couple of weeks is I've been playing more online now because, you know, I can play whatever I want online, right?
Yeah.
And so Saturday, you know, I was trying to drown my sorrows in this World Bowl or whatever this thing is called, this soccer game that I found myself watching.
World Bowl.
And, you know, the USA lost to some little tiny country in Africa. And so I'm home, and I'm like, you know what, I'll jump in a tournament. So I got into this PLO8 tournament, right? It was starting, I don't know, 1:30, 2 o'clock. And, you know, the wife was going to be home around 5 or 6 when we're going to go to dinner. So I'm like, you know, I try to figure there's only like 150, 200 people in this thing. I'm like, it'll probably be over by then. I'll get into it, all right?
Yeah.
So I get into it, and this was one of those, and it was already late registration, right? So I figured, you know, most of the people were already in. So I get in, and this is one of those extended registration tournaments of Poker Stars. I don't know if you've seen these, but essentially you can enter until you die. And so by the time the registration ended, we were up to 650 people or something like that.
God.
Almost 700, I think it was. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what did I get myself into? This thing's not going to end until there's new laws in Florida. And I got the wife coming home. She's going to be hungry. She's going to want to go to dinner. I'm not going to be able to say, hey, honey, I'm in a $4 tournament. Can we not eat tonight? You know, that's not going to happen, right?
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, all right, well, there's nothing I can do about it now. I'll just keep playing my game and trying to get as much enjoyment out of this $4.40 tournament I got in. You know, if I have to walk away from it, no big deal. I know $4 isn't going to break me. And so she gets home, and at that point, I was doing pretty well, which, you know, of course is what's going to happen, right? When she's out of town, I will get into a tournament and be knocked out in the first hand.
Yeah, it's Murphy's Law, man. That's the way it goes.
So I was doing fairly well. So at that point, the light bulb went off in my head. I'm like, you know what? If I chip up enough here, I could sign off this bad boy and still cash. So then I had to channel my inner Gundam and rant and find math skills that I don't even have to try to figure out, you know, what my M is, how many laps around the table I can get, what is the maximum, what is the comfortable level of chips I need to accumulate here in the last 20 minutes that I can play so I can sign off, go have a grouper sandwich and a beer, and come home and have money in my account, right?
Okay, so I really got to hear, do you actually have like a formula that you've come up with? Like, are we going to be naming this the long theorem or something? You know, I mean, is there something that you've actually come up with to figure out, here's what I have to do to get to X amount of time during X amount of players, and I'm dying to find out what you have to do here to do this.
That would make for a fantastic story, wouldn't it?
It would.
I really probably should have figured that out because that would make this story a lot better. But no, of course not. I don't know what I'm doing. But, you know, I did figure it in, like, at one point I was, I don't know, I was like at 12,000 or something, and the blinds were like 400, 800. So I'm like, all right, so I've got probably 10 laps around maybe. At 9 people, you know, that's probably what 90 hands or so before I'm blinded out, and maybe I'll get lucky because it's PLO 8, right? So I might get lucky and win a couple all-ins at the end and extend my life. But so I just started potting with decent hands. I wasn't going crazy. I wasn't like, you know, if I got 4-7 jack deuce or something ridiculous, I wasn't potting. But if I got ace deuce, I was potting. I had pocket pair, I was potting. And it was amazing to me how well I was playing.
Well, I know I've just learned something because 4-7 Jack Deuce was my favorite hand. But now, now that you told me it's ridiculous, I don't want to be foolish, so I can't play that now. So, wow, we're both learning in this situation.
And, you know, so I was and I was doing well. I mean, the only thing, I only got my money in bad once and hit my flush on the river to stay alive. And after that, I kept potting and pushing people in. People were calling me left and right, and I was chipping up. And so I eventually got up to like 30-some thousand in chips. And jeez. I told the wife, all right, we're getting the car. Got home that night. I went straight to my email, and there's a beautiful little PokerStar support email with results. I finished 35th out of 700 players. When jeez. I left, we were still – I still had to fade 60 players, I think, to make the money.
Oh, man.
We had 120 left, so I outlasted another 90 players not playing.
Holy cow.
I made $11.80 while I was out having a beer.
That's the way you do it. Let your money work for you. You played a guitar on the MTV. That ain't working. That is awesome. So how many places got paid in this? Like 70?
It was, I want to say it was 80, I believe.
Wow. So you like survived the bubble.
Yeah.
And then even went further because you were going to make the money like 10 spots. That,
yeah, actually, I think it was 70, right. So I moved up quite a bit more than I was hoping for. I was just hoping to make it right in the money, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Wow.
And get my $4.60 or whatever ridiculous, you know, money for that is. But it was interesting to me because I was had to factor in the blinds and all that, right?
Yeah.
I also had to factor in how many players were left. I factored in the average stack size to know where I was. I had to be, you know, I was above average, but I wanted to get more above average. And then looking at the remaining players and how many short stacks there were. But then you also, like I said, you got to factor in it's PO08, and it's hard to knock people out in PO08.
Yeah.
Because they can get lucky and, you know, backdoor low or win a high with pocket deuces or something ridiculous.
Another hand I can't play anymore now. And you're just embarrassing me now on the show, man. These are all my favorite hands.
But, you know, it was a tremendous achievement in the otherwise non-illustrious career of Scott Long at poker to actually cash in a tournament when he wasn't playing.
Yeah, one of your finest moments, and you're not there for it. That sounds about par for you, I think.
But, you know, the other thing I was thinking, too, Chris, is I felt a little bit bad playing this way. I mean, again, I wasn't pushing with crazy stuff, but I was pushing chips around. It's not these other people's fault at the table that I can't plan my social life around the tournament.
Right.
And I had to leave. So should I have felt bad that I'm affecting these other people's games who sign up for this tournament or are playing?
I don't think so. I mean, how do they know that's why you're playing that way? I mean, people do play the way you played. You know, they have to adjust for whatever situation is coming their way at the table at that time. I mean, just because you don't normally play that way doesn't mean that people don't normally play that way. And they have to recognize that you are potting it with less than optimal hands, and then they have to adjust. So I wouldn't feel bad. I mean, what if you just chose that tournament to try a different strategy and play it a way you normally don't play? All right, now, is that wrong? That's not wrong. So this was something you had to do. I think you should be proud of it, that you actually said, oh, my God, you recognized your time is dwindling. You recognized the only way to cash, or at least move up in cashing, because you probably were going to cash no matter what, you know, was to do this, and you did it. I wouldn't feel bad. I'd feel proud. I think that was a good achievement, the way you did it and planned it. And just like a good poker player, you adjusted to your situation and surroundings and did what you had to do to make money. I wouldn't feel bad for the other people. I mean, they know getting into this tournament. A lot of people do shit like that. I mean, of course, I should probably beep that out now. But a lot of people do that. You know, what I don't like is when people can't recognize that you're away and they don't raise automatically. Right, they're like calling and checking the whole way. I'm like, bet! He's not there! Bet! You know, that's what drives me crazy. But other than that, I wouldn't feel bad at all.
You're the wind beneath my wings,
Oh, Bette Midler. You inspire me.
Oh, man. But, you know, it also makes me wonder how often this stuff happens. I mean, but it was fun, and I'm certainly not the only one that's done this before. But it was interesting to find myself in a situation, and I'm like, at one point, I was just going to log off. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I'll play until the wife gets home. And then at some point, the light bulb went off. Probably should have gone off earlier. But I wonder what would happen to me if it would have went off earlier and I was playing this style beforehand. Because, you know, it could be risky. I mean, it's high risk, high return.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, you know, when you talk about the greatest poker players in the world, a lot of them have a huge disregard for money and don't have to worry about it or think about cashing. They can do stuff like that where people will cringe at the thought of calling a pot-sized bet, you know, and that's how they survive and thrive. They're aggressive even when they don't have the cards, and you just did it out of desperation and it worked. So I mean it's just a sign that it's true that it actually works to do that.
Well, you know, and I found myself in this tournament because I found myself not in Apes very long, which was earlier that morning. And, you know, gosh dag darn it, Chris. Don't you hate in any tournament, not even but especially Apes, you know, a tournament you really want to win.
Right.
When someone raises under the gun, you find yourself with pocket aces. So you re-raise, as you should. Shouldn't slow play it. And it gets back to that person, and they're like, you know what? I don't believe you. And they shove all in, and you call, and they turn over ace-king, and you're like, awesome. Awesome. And apparently that's spelled O-S-U-M now that on Facebook, you know, wife and all the other friends, that's how they spell it. You know, oh, it's killing me as a journalist. But that's exactly what happened to me in Apes. And, of course, the flop comes to king. And I know I was not alone at the table going, all right, is it going to be the turn or is it going to be the river?
Yeah.
And boom, it was turn, and a one out left for the river didn't come. Boom, gone.
Jeez.
Brutal.
That is scary.
Brutal. But congratulations to Into FT Ball. And the deuce is a numeral there. But Into Football, who took down his first banana. He's all the way from Colorado, so he had to get up pretty early.
I want to see a picture of the banana with, like, skis on it going down.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That's what I'm hoping to see.
Awesome.
And I don't mean, like, big skis. I mean, I want them to, like, carve out little miniature skis out of balsa wood. And make this little, you know, make like a little guy, you know, with the little poles and everything, and that would be great. Man, Colorado, that's great.
Well, that's great, and our winner did call in, so let's hear what he had to say.
Hi, Scott. Hi, Chris. This is John, or Into Football, latest winner on the Apes Poker. Just want to say I had a great time. I guess that goes without saying. I don't think anybody would call up and say they had a bad time after they won. But did get pretty lucky. I guess you got to sometime. But been a listener since day one. You guys got a great show. Looking forward to playing in some more events. Once again, thanks.
Well, congratulations again, Into Football. Sounds like he's been a long-time listener, Chris.
And, yeah, and I'm glad he called, too.
Finally got the nanner, and so we'll send that out. And, you know, folks, the next Apes event will be – the next free roll, actually, is 9 p.m. July 7th. It's a Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, and that will be for our No Limit Hold'em rebuy event, and then the actual event will be 1 week later on July 14th. As we said, the free roll for the rebuy event probably will not be that exciting.
No, it won't be. And, you know, and I'll be in Vegas watching the World Series main event and talking to people out there, and so I probably won't be in there, since although I will have the laptop. So, you know, if I find myself at 6 o'clock, do I have the buffet at the Rio, or do I play in a $1 rebuy free roll seat? We'll see. I don't know.
The top 10 get a dollar entry.
I don't know. It could win out. You never know. We'll see. I may be there.
But, you know, here's the thing. I'm looking forward. You know, I know all of our listeners hate the interlopers, but I really am looking forward to the interlopers entering this free roll and winning this. See, we already laugh at them when they unregister and then re-register when they find out they can't use that tournament dollars for whatever tournament they won. But can you imagine coming in this free roll and playing good poker and winning a $1 seat that you can't unregister for, and then but you can't even really play it after that, I mean, because you're going to have to rebuy, and obviously these people have no money. So they'll be in and out of that the actual event. That's going to be some poetic justice, I think.
I actually picture that as, like, their hell when they die. Okay, interloper, you get to play $1 free rolls for the rest of eternity and not unregister. That's what I imagine, man.
Oh, man. But yeah, definitely show up on July 14th, the Rebuy event. It's always one of the most fun Apes events every year, and I'm sure there will be some over-unders on the forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum as to who is going to be the craziest Rebuy guy or gal in this event.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. One thing the over-under on is zero for me. I'm sure that I won't be the crazy guy. Last time, I'm pretty sure Rant sent me, like, enough money to do the add-on and the Rebuy in my account to make sure that I would do it, you know. But I was doing pretty well without it, and then I ended up doing it anyway. But, yeah, so again, you know, I don't think I'll set the record for Rebuys, that's for sure.
All right, we do have do not have a Rebuy event on the Antiup Poker Cruise 3, but we do have a lot of excitement for it. We'll remind folks to go to antiupmagazine.com/cruise. All the details that are there for the October 25th cruise to the Bahamas. Again, just $299 a person based on double occupancy. Sold 7 or 8 cabins in the first weekend, Chris.
Sweet.
We only have 100, so going quickly. And Crackpot won. You know, all excited. He's giddy after Chris Rose loved his name on the last week's show.
Yeah, a Fox executive, I think, is what he called him.
But he called in this week, and he has a question about the cruise.
Hi, guys. This is David Bloomberg, Crackpot One on the boards. Glad Chris Rose liked my handle there. I have a question for you guys that maybe some other listeners may have the same situation. My question is, I would love to go on the poker cruise, and I'm sure my wife would love to go on a cruise, but the word poker may just have a problem there. So, any suggestions on how to get my wife to go along on a poker cruise? And by the way, if anyone is listening to this who knows me, please don't say anything to my wife. Thanks, guys.
Crackpot, wife tax. One word.
Is that one word?
It is not, because you have to squish it together.
Squish it together and give your wife the tax. Man,
here's the thing. You tell the wife, hey, honey, I'm buying it for you. That seems, in my experience, to go a very long way.
Yeah, you buy the cruise for her and let her just relax on the boat while you play. Man, she'll go. She'll bite.
But, you know, more to it. I mean, there's, you know, it's interesting to me how many calls I've gotten already from people who have never cruised before. And I'm not making fun of them, obviously. If you haven't cruised before, you don't know what a cruise is like. But you get a tremendous amount of value just on any cruise. The fact that this is a poker cruise is even better. But, you know, all your food's included. You can hang out by the pool. You got shows at night you can go to that are all free. You know, some activities like cooking demonstrations and wine stuff. So you know, there's a lot to do on board. So, I mean, obviously, if you bring your wife's going to want to see you every once in a while.
Yeah.
You know, not just for a quick bite and, you know, a shower. So you're not going to want to spend some time with her. But you know, it's not like taking your wife to a poker room. You know?
No, exactly. And even our party, our little welcoming party, that's fun. It's free drinks and everybody sits around and you know, talks and chats and, you know, and there's always dancing and things like that to do. There's always on – it's like this huge little – you know, they give you this, like, flyer in your room every morning telling you all the things that you can do on the ship all day long scheduled, and there's plenty to do. And, you know, I like to – room service, you know, totally free.
And you totally want
to tip,
free.
You can tip the guy. You have to tip the guy. They don't let you do that for – but, I mean, if you know – you know, totally free. Anything you want to eat at any time, just order the food. And you're sitting pretty. So, I mean, what's more could you want? I mean, free food in your room and, oh, man, I love it.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I think some people haven't realized is, you know, our group is just one small part of the normal cruise. There are going to be 2,500 people on this cruise
are
not part of our group. So, you know, it's not like there's just going to be poker widows and poker players.
And by the way, we're in the Bahamas, you know.
Yes, that is right.
You know, we're
right.
Going to the Bahamas, this land of, you know, beautiful beaches and water. And, oh, man, so, you know, for free. You know, if your spouse is going to pay for it, go.
So, Crackpot One, hope that helps. I know a couple other people have sent in questions about that, too. So bring the wives, bring the husbands, bring the kids, you know, free babysitting on board, too. Or not free, but free group activities.
Right, right. And we'll teach them how to check raise, too, if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, we have an interesting Antiup News Desk. Let's get going.
In an interview with Reuters, Harrah's Entertainment CEO Gary Loveman said the Las Vegas market is not expected to rebound anytime soon, so the company's focus will be on emerging markets like Ohio, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Asia, as well as a push for legalized online gaming in the United States.
That's all we needed right there. That is all we needed. Once Harrah's says we need to legalize online gaming, it's coming. Right? I mean, they're the largest casino company in the world, and the last thing America needs is Harrah's saying, hey, we're going to pull out because we can't afford to be in this market anymore. So they're going to want to help them, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the paradox of this, and we've seen this a lot in Florida, is, poker companies are very competitive. Nothing wrong with that. But, as we push to get regulated online poker here, I think we'd be better served with everybody going into it together and then letting the best man or woman win. And, what Harrah's is pushing, from what I understand, is to exclude anybody who doesn't have a base in the United States. So effectively trying to shut out like the Poker Stars and the Full Tilts of the world from this, and that's kind of counterproductive. But, anything that can get this on the consciousness of our lawmakers, I am for right now, and we'll let the details work themselves out.
Well, don't you think, too, though, that if the law gets passed where online gaming is legal in the United States, if you're based in the United States, Poker Stars and Full Tilt and all these are going to build...
Well, yeah, but I do think it's all the you know how lawmakers are and how lobbyists are in writing these bills and writing little tiny phrases here or there that seem innocuous on the surface but really have a pretty big impact somewhere. So I would not be surprised if a very good lobbyist for a big company like Harrah's would find a way to write the law that would somehow permanently prevent these big sites from coming in or having to get devious about how they do it. So,
man,
but we're getting way ahead of ourselves. We're not we're happy today. We got real poker here in Florida. I'm not going to dwell on what we can't play. How's that?
Oh, the power of positive thinking. Women Poker Player magazine has announced that voting is open for its first Maven Awards, which will honor achievements of women on and off the felt on a global scale. And voting continues through September 30th at mavenawards.com. And I think, isn't our own Lauren Faiella nominated for one of these?
I'm gonna channel Bob Uecker from Major League. If not, she should be.
I think she is.
But no, I'm pretty sure she is. And, this is good. Let's promote women in poker. I mean, I don't regularly read Women Poker Player magazine, but I've had some conversations with the editor there. And, it's a good publication. And now they're trying to spotlight some women that are working their tails off to make poker better. So
I agree.
And finally, a New Zealand court has ruled that .net advertisements do not promote gaming operators and that poker tournaments are a form of competition, not gambling. This comes from Annie Up partner PokerNews.com.
See, every time they take something away, they give us something back.
Exactly.
I mean, it's New Zealand, and it's helping only a small portion of the Annie Up nation, but, maybe that will set some sort of precedent that people will look to say, hey, this is kind of ridiculous, .net. It's a .net site. Just because it may lead to a .com site doesn't mean that it's illegal. And who knows? We'll see what happens from this.
Well, it's always nice to know that we have clear heads prevailing in other parts of the world, because obviously we don't have our stuff together here in the U.S., so.
hey, stay positive.
I'm positive that there are good, smart, forward-thinking people in New Zealand. That's what I'm positive about.
Hey, we have a hotline, everyone. I don't know if you knew that or not. Maybe you just tuned into the show. Maybe you haven't heard it in the past. But we have a hotline, and the phone number is 813-448-1120. And if you call it, this little recording will come on. You can leave a message, and we can take that message and put it on the show. And if we do that, we'd give you something. We would just give you something.
Just free.
Just for free. You don't have to, it's not one of those trial offers. Yeah. You don't have to, take a month of the, No, it's free. We'll give you something for free.
Don't have to call Judy at Time Life. just shows up in your mailbox.
Yeah.
And the same if you email podcast@annieupmagazine.com for our mailbag feature. In case you don't like the sound of your own voice, you can type something out. And if you can't type, then you can call. I mean, it's...
We've got all the bases covered.
There's a way to get on the show one way or the other, no matter what your limitations are. But hopefully we'll bring back those great features next week. But you know what that means? Our Hand of the Week winner gets the choice of swag today.
Yes, very, very exciting. And that's like it's like spinning the wheel on The Price is Right. You're rooting for the green. You want them to land on the red, but you never know where it's going to go or if they're going to go over and you're going to hear that bum, bum, ba, da. And, you know, so I'm looking forward to the Hand of the Week. I want to see I think the guy's name is Cornell. And I want to see. I want to see what he picks. But first, let's start a new mystery.
Greetings. This is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, a really good blog that you should visit. And this is another one-minute mystery: the case of the purloined letter. It's incredibly early at a multi-table online tournament, and it folds around to the cutoff, who, due to a bad decision on the last hand, is forced to move all in with this tiny stack of 215.
There are all kinds of people, sir.
Strangely, the button requests time, then folds, leaving a battle of the blinds. The small blind calls the 215, and I look down at two black aces. Nothing more difficult than a big pair in an early level, but obviously I'll raise, and I make it 888. Now the small blind calls time, but eventually calls. The flop comes down four of hearts, queen of hearts, eight of clubs, and he checks. I expect pretty much any bet here to end the hand, but when I bet 500 into the pot of 1800, he calls without delay. The first decision he has made without a delay.
Surprising, to say the least.
The turn's the three of hearts, and when he checks, I check behind. The river's the seven of hearts, and after a delay, he bets 750. So, fold or crying call?
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem five Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that five of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
You know how they say anything can happen during live television?
You know, here's the thing. I don't know who they is. But I'm getting pretty ticked off that they are so powerful.
Didn't you ever read the Far Side cartoon?
Of course I did.
There's that one where the guy walks into the room, and there's a guy on the phone, and on his shirt it says they, and the guy says, so you're the they that they talk about. It's that guy right there.
That guy is way too powerful, I think. But go on.
There's Janet
what is
Jackson.
What's saying now?
There's Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction. There, you know, any given Saturday night, the host on Saturday Night Live will start laughing, you know, just uncontrollably and can't finish his lines. And, you know, it's live TV. Anything can happen. Well, that's sort of how I feel about today's main topic. Because you and I haven't talked about what we're going to say to each other about this. So anything could happen here, but really, we were talking about the show, and we didn't really have a topic. We had some more people we could probably bring on and keep interviewing people, but we like to mix it up. And I thought to myself, I was playing online the other night, and it was like stud 8, I think. That might have been the 8-game mix, but I was in the stud 8 rotation. And I looked down at like ace, deuce, queen, right? And we were shorthanded. And I thought to myself, I really don't know what to do here, you know? And I thought to myself, there are some things the poker world needs, okay? So I said to you, Scott, we need to come up with some stuff that the poker world still needs. You know, everyone thinks it's perfect. We got unlimited, uncapped poker in Florida now. So what else could we want? Well, there are some things. So you and I have come up with a short list, three items each, of what we think the poker world still needs today. So do you want to kick it off?
Have, Again, we have no idea what the other people are saying, so one of us could take this very hilariously, and one of us could take it very seriously, or both of us could take it seriously, or both of us could take it hilariously. Wow.
Somehow,
live without a net.
Somehow, I think one of those scenarios will come true. But I'll let you start.
All right, I will start. I am going to say the first thing that we need are more opportunities to play, but not cannibalization. And not that we're going to eat each other at the table. I mean, we're not like, you know, thought the stars crashed at the Andes or anything, right? But, you know, I just wrote a column for the July issue of Anti-Up magazine, free in rooms all across the Southeast and also online.
Yes.
And kind of the idea of the column was that, you know, we got these new limits in Florida. We got 14 new poker rooms that will have opened from Memorial Day to the end of July in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. Obviously, around the world, and other poker rooms might have opened up too. And I think that's great news. That's more opportunity for us to play. And we have these great new social networking poker sites, you know, like the Zynga poker that people were playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, poker leagues are popping up. And, you know, we're hoping for regulation of online poker here in the United States and other countries that don't allow it now. So I say, simply put, the more opportunities people have to play the game, the more likely they are to play the game, and that makes all of us who are already playing the game happier.
I think that's a wonderful way to start. And I am wondering, too, when you say without cannibalization, are you
yes.
saying that they should look to each other to help each other rather than ruin each other, like when it's in a competitive market?
Well, here's what I was going to say. The caveat, I like saying that just because it makes me sound French. I don't even know if it's a French word, but the caveat. The caveat here, though, is that we have to understand that poker is not like blackjack or slot machines, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have participation in order to have poker. So what my fear is, and I've been told by our good friend Antonio Pinzari of Poker Wars Live when I mentioned this on his show that I'm crazy, which is fine, that if our poker market gets bloated and there's so many ways to play poker that there aren't enough people at each of the individual places, that eventually it will constrict further than it is now. You know, for example, I'll use an example. You walk into your favorite poker room and there are only one person there that wants to play the game you want to play, guess what? You're not playing.
Yeah.
So you have to keep that in mind, that just because we think a poker room is going to open, that it's going to be just like the poker room down the street, but eventually we're going to run out of people that want to play, and we might have a nation full of opportunities to play poker with no one there to play it. That's what I'm worried about.
Indeed, indeed. Okay, well, since you took it seriously... I am going to be happy that I took my first one seriously, and I will market the scenario I opened the show with by saying I was playing in a stud 8 game, right, and it was shorthanded, and I didn't know what to do, and it occurred to me there are no shorthanded poker books. We need a complete shorthanded poker book.
Interesting.
We need, because, you know, you think about all the other ones I tell you about. You know, I mean, there might be some shorthanded play in tournaments or something like that. But really, you look at Super System, it just goes into what hands to play and how to play them and how to play people. But there's never anything in any of these books that is a complete guide to shorthanded. You know, all right, so you're heads up with somebody, okay? You're heads up. And you're playing heads up horse. And you're in, you know, stud 8. Do you play because you have a bare ace and all, or do you fold when it gets raised to you? What do you do? And not that I don't know what to do in that situation, but there are tons of situations where a shorthanded book would really come in handy and tell me, okay, look, when you're playing stud 8, you know, I know it's optimal to start with three babies suited, but really, if you got an ace in the hand, it's very powerful, and you should consider playing that hand for a race. Well, okay, there you go. But when you read, like, Brunson's, you know, Todd's chapter in System 2, he only talks about how to start optimally and some other modifications on that, but really nothing shorthanded. So that's mine. A complete shorthanded poker book needs to be written.
Well, I like that, and I think the best person to write that would be a shill or proposition player, you know, whose job it is to parachute into these shorthanded games and get them started, and then they yank them out right when they get juicy. You know, Kenneth James used to be a shill and or a prop player, and I know there's lots of other ones around there. And that's who I would like to see play that, because I think they have more experience at that than even particularly the pros.
That's a great point. Yeah, that's a great point. So I
look
I
at that. I improved yours for you.
Oh, you are the wind beneath my wings.
All right, well, you know, I'm obviously taking this serious route here, so I'm hoping you're bringing the funny at some point. But my second one is that we need a new standard bearer for women in poker.
What does that mean?
All right, so here's the thing. We have many, many extremely talented and accomplished female poker pros. You know, Jennifer Harmon, Andy Duke, Vanessa Russo, lots of other ones I could go on about. Obviously, millions of women play very good poker all around the world. But I think we just need the non-poker world to know that.
Yeah.
So I think what it's going to take for that to happen is nothing short of a woman winning the World Series of Poker. Really is the only tournament that gets mainstream media coverage.
You know why I'm laughing, right? You know why I'm laughing.
Because I just stole yours, right?
That's my number two.
Yes! I knew that was going to happen at some point.
But it's true. We need a woman who, you know, I mean, it could be a star, but no, I agree.
Here, I will disagree with you on that, because here's what I'm going to say. I would say if we could cast that woman, and obviously we can't, you know, it's all going to be my fuck. I think we would want a female version of Chris Moneymaker.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean an unknown player, preferably one with a great name like Moneymaker.
Right.
And somebody with more guts than good looks.
Yeah.
And here's why I say that. You know, I mean, no disrespect to any of the women that are well-known as poker players, but the vast majority, and all of them made their chops on the table before someone grabbed them and made them a celebrity.
Yeah.
But when you think of the female poker stars, a lot of them are very good-looking, and some of them probably have that experience because they're so good-looking.
Right.
Not so much their game, which is good, but not as great. So I would love to see, and I'm not, you know, I'd love to see just what I would like to see really is another Moneymaker effect. And I don't think we're going to see it from a guy.
Right.
We're going to see it from a woman. And if it's a woman that kind of channels that whole Chris Moneymaker thing, that's what's going to make a good story for the mainstream media. And that's what we need is coverage in the mainstream media.
Yes, I totally agree. Obviously. Because that was my number two. And so here's what's going to happen. I'm going to bring my number three up to number two.
Oh, I'm going to be a closer then.
And then you're going to be maybe the closer unless you're babbling on about your third one, I come up with one somehow. Because you have been known to talk so long that I actually have been known to think about other things while you're talking. So who knows? It may happen. But I'll move AJ Benza up. I think AJ Benza needs to be back in the booth, specifically with Gabe, but if not, somewhere else. We miss AJ Benza, and I think High Stakes Poker cannot survive without him. I think it will be canceled unless he comes back. So I'm saying the poker world needs AJ Benza.
Wow, you're just going to hate this, but... That was not at all my third
one. I knew that wasn't going to be here. There's no way you were doing that one.
But, you know, the other thing about AJ Benza, not only does he's just such a good personality, but he's outside of the poker world. And, you know, that's not a rare thing. I mean, we had Chris Rose on the show last week. He's really outside the poker world.
Right.
And some of these other commentators that are brought on because they're commentators. But, again, any link to that outside world is what's going to help because it brings people in. I mean, I tell some friends, you know, when we had AJ on the show before that don't play poker. And I'm like, hey, AJ Benson's going to be on their show. And they're like, why? Well, you guys, like, doing an e-news show now? And I'm like, you know, so I had to explain to them that. And they're like, well, that's pretty cool. So, you know, anybody that people can identify with that aren't poker players – and bridge that gap into poker, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that he was good for it, at least for that show, especially with Gabe. And, you know, I watched all the episodes this season, and I really didn't enjoy almost any of them. And I literally fast-forwarded over Gabe when I T-voted it every single time and just got to the poker. Whereas when AJ was there, I had to hear what they were going to say to each other. And you know what? The worst part is Gabe needs someone to laugh at his jokes.
Don't we all?
I mean, even if the jokes aren't funny, AJ would do something that would make him funny or at least react to him to make you kind of giggle and not mind it so much. But when Gabe's all by himself, it's not like, Ali. You know, Ali makes some jokes occasionally, but really he's not a comedian. He's a poker player who has a nice voice. So, you know, he's generally just doing the right play-by-play, whereas Gabe is always trying to be funny, and most of his jokes, you know, come from the Mickey Rooney era, and I don't get them. Yeah. So I think we really need AJ Benza in there, and we need him back.
Yeah, it's a lot like when I'm telling jokes to the wife. The crickets love them. You're totally right. You need somebody to decipher it since she has never seen any movie made in the 1980s. All right. Well, I guess I'll close it here unless you dramatically come up with something here.
Okay.
And I am going to be controversial with this last one.
Wow.
I'm going to put myself out there, taking that bulletproof vest off. Go ahead. Bring it on, folks.
Can it be controversial if you're saying it's controversial or,
Yes, that I'm making my own viral video here by saying that it's viral. Yes.
Okay.
I think we need a collective effort from every poker player to help grow the game. All right, so not controversial yet, right?
Right.
But here's the thing. It's no secret poker players can be miserable cusses, right?
Yeah.
Complain about the rake, they complain about the temperature, they complain about their opponent's play, they complain about how many chips they get in a tournament. All right, so I'm not saying the poker players can't exercise their First Amendment rights to say whatever it is that comes into their head, but I also say it's unquestioned in my mind that poker players fighting poker rooms and their managers and other people that are trying to do good things in poker holds the game's progress back. Players have to understand that poker is a business and everyone involved in the poker business is in the business. So if they choose their battles a little more wisely, not a lot, just a little more wisely, and can be a little more accommodating of innovation, I think we're going to see this game grow much more quickly.
I agree. I think a good example of that would be Joe Conte in West Palm Beach. Now, he's a guy that played all the time at the Kennel Club down there. He had his own show like we have. He's the co-host, or pretty much the co-host of Poker Talk America, our good friend Anthony Pinzaro's show. And he's the kind of guy that would do it right. He would go to the management there and talk to them about the tournaments and give them ideas. He would give them ideas. He wouldn't moan about what was going on. He would just say to them, hey, you know, here's a good idea for a tournament. Here's something that we could do or whatever. And he did it so professionally and often and had such a good ear for what the players wanted that they hired him as their tournament, right? Their tournament director or whatever you want to call it. And he's the kind of guy, and that's the way to get it done. That's the way we should be. You shouldn't worry about whether or not, you know, you're getting 5,000 chips instead of 4,500 or whatever. You know, you should try to come up with solutions for them and do it in a professional manner, too. You know,
or at least ask why things are.
Yeah.
You know, here's the other controversial thing I'll say is these internet forums are killing not just poker, but they're killing civility in our country.
Yeah.
And our forum is not so bad. By and large, I'm very proud of the folks that are on our forum, and they're a little more intelligent than the normal forum poster and can argue with reason, but you go on some of these other forums and it's just ridiculous. It's the people just want to bitch.
Yep.
That's all they want to do.
And our managers go on there and read the stuff and then they feel terrible because of one person, because, you know, it takes like 10 positives to erase one negative.
Yeah.
So when they see one guy moaning about something that happened in their room, now all of a sudden you get other guys jumping on the bandwagon and stuff, and it's just making – and then they're going to make decisions based on one voice instead of, you know, positive comments, and they know what's going and what's being done right in their room. You know, you just need to – you need to really just temper your temper.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we all join hands and sing Kumbaya here and let anything happen, but – you know, again, just, you know, if you don't like a tournament structure, you don't like the temperature in the room, or you don't like something, you know, rather than whining to your buddy or worse, going on a forum and posting with the anonymous name, you know, go to the source and say, you know, hey, I'm not happy with this. Can you explain to me why you're doing it this way?
Right.
And my experience is with managers or other companies or stuff, if you do that, one, at the very least, you'll learn what their thought process is. And if their thought process is, hey, we just want to do it that way, then go ahead, flame them for all I care. But generally, they're going to say, hey, here is why we have to do it that way. And you're starting a conversation, and maybe you'll open their eyes to a different way of doing it, and it gets fixed that way. Nothing ever comes from belly aching, I don't think. Nothing positive.
No, and most of the time when you hear their explanation, it will make you feel better, and you'll understand it, and you'll be able to respect it and move on.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, you know what? That's a real good one to wrap up with. I mean, I realize our catastrophe wasn't exactly on the level of Janet Jackson's nipple being shown on television. But, you know, it worked out well. And I'm glad that we both came up with the same idea, because that makes it all more positive and important that it does need to happen, that a woman does need to be in the main event. So I thought it was pretty good. I think those are some good things that people should consider and think about. And really, if somebody wants to write a shorthanded book and they need an editor, let me know. I'm just throwing it out there, Gavin Smith.
And if somebody wants to complain about it, go ahead.
Just do it in a positive reinforcement, constructive criticism way.
Hey, this is AJ Benz, and you're listening to Annie Up. Same. Ain't it a bitch?
Got a live hand for you this week, Chris, all the way from Garden City Casino in San Jose, California.
Oh, cool.
Never been to San Jose. Been to San Francisco. I don't think if I did, I drove through San Jose, but... you could explain why I'm not a techie.
San Jose, that's where the Bay 101 is,
and they
love their poker there.
Yep. And our Hand of the Week submitter is named Cornell. That's all the information he's given us so far, so he's playing the somewhat anonymous card here. but he boldly says that this is an intriguing hand, Chris.
Okay, well, we'll be the judge of that.
All right, and then he tempers it quickly by saying, or at least I think it's intriguing. See, that's the way you talk to people.
Yes, yes. You say you're going to be controversial, and then you sort of temper.
Give yourself an out.
Yeah, you give yourself an out.
All right, it's a live multi-table tournament. He says it's the first hand at the final table. Buy-in for this tournament was $150. They started with 10,000 units. 57 players entered the tournament, and the payout structure, remember, we're at the final table now, right. Nine hand. 8 and 9 get 216, 7th gets 250, 6th gets 300, 5th gets 380, 4th 485, 3rd 734, 2nd 1400, and 1st 2800. All right?
Yeah.
So all the numbers really add up to 1st and 2nd get a crap load of money.
Right.
Everybody else doesn't get really that much more than the previous person.
Right. Third's pretty good, too, but yeah. That's why it usually goes. Yeah, third's not too bad.
All right. He says, at this point, the blinds are 4K, 2K. So that's all right, Cornell. You could be dyslexic. We'll switch that around. assuming they're 2K, 4K. No shame in that.
I would love to see the big blind fold to the small blind.
That would be awesome.
Here's an extra $2,000 for no reason.
All right, our hero has 46K in chips, his M is squiggly 7.7, which puts him in the Harrington Orange Zone, and he has squiggly 12 big blinds.
All right.
Since I've read my Harrington, so I'll trust him that he's in the Orange Zone, and if that's a good thing, yay, Cornell. If it's a bad thing, I'm hanging for you, man.
It's not bad, but it's not great.
Okay,
how's
good.
That?
All right, very good. So he's starting to get kind of short, but he said most of the final table was, too. There are at least 5 players who are under 20,000 in units, and he was expecting them to drop like flies now that they're in the money.
Right.
That kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get that big exhale that you've cashed, and now you can play crazy.
Yep.
All right, first hand, the final table. Button is in seat 9, and our hero is in seat 6. The uber big stack. With 150 to 200K in chips, is under the gun in seat 3 and limps in on the first hand. That's never good.
That's not good. Not good.
Seats 4 and 5 fold, and it gets to us in seat 6 with ace of hearts, king of hearts.
Very nice.
He says he has no kind of read whatsoever on the guy who opened limps. He was an older, gray-haired gentleman, and I've never, 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 ever played one hand against this guy, ever. So I'm guessing he has never played a hand with this guy.
Jeez.
He says he plays at the casino 3 to 5 times a month, and I know who the regulars are, and this guy is not one of them. All he knows is he has all the chips, so he must have done something right. Kind of a stretch there, but we'll give him credit for it, right?
Yeah.
All right, so what do we do with Ace of Hearts, King of Hearts, pretty good hand, against the big stack, though, who we don't normally want to play against, who is limping under the gun?
Well, I really don't think this guy has aces. It doesn't seem like that's the kind of hand he would do that. At the first final table, when he knows people are going to be, you know, he could be pushing people around significantly here, and... You know, he could get away with just raising like normal here if he had aces, because he knows a lot of the short stacks might shove now with like a queen jack or something. So I don't think this guy's limping with aces. He's got some sort of suited cards, maybe a small pair. So I'm going to have to raise and see if this guy's serious and making a significant enough raise that, you know, it's like 20,000 or something.
Yeah, so you'll do like maybe a 4X like you...
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. If I did 4X, that'd be 16,000. I don't know if there's antes or not. I don't think he said that, did he?
He didn't mention it, so I'm assuming not.
All right, so, I mean, 16,000, that's about a third of our stack, so I guess that's still okay without shoving, but if you're getting close to 50%, you might as well just shove. You know, we don't have 8 to 10 blinds. We have about 12, so
right.
I guess you can get away with doing a legitimate raise. So maybe make it 16 to 17,000.
Well, you know, here's the other thing, too, that's interesting. I mean, we talk about normally doing 3X and then adding to a, you know, adding a limper into 4X. But when it gets late in a tournament, you generally get the same result by even min-raising or 2.5-raising, even if some people poke it in, because it's so many chips.
Right.
It's such a big percentage of people's stacks. So, I mean, I wouldn't mind a, you know, even an 8K, maybe a 10K. That would still... leave us 36K, right?
If something happens. Well, I think we're trying to, or at least trying to get this under the gun guy to go away if we can, too, though, because he's the only guy that can felt us at the table.
Right.
You know, pretty much. So I don't think 2.5 or 2 times is going to make this guy fold, since he's already limped and there's another guy in there. So I'm still looking to get that guy out. And if not, I want him to define his hand here. So I think I'm still raising more than the standard 2 or. I still think I'm making it like 15,000-16,000 here.
15,000-16,000. All right.
And if he re-raises me, I have no problem shoving with Ace King of Hearts.
Yeah, at that point you've committed yourself, and you know it's not a bad hand, and
yeah,
you know you're in the money, you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
And obviously getting it all in against the big stack and winning, you're going to double up.
Right.
So, interesting. All right. Well, our hero says he has 46K, so he thinks he has just a bit too much to shove, which I think we agree.
Yeah.
And he said he really didn't want to do that because if the villain shows him ace-ace, he would vomit on the spot. also, there were so many people who were so short-stacked and were going to be all in when the blinds get to them. He believes that he has enough chips barely to raise to show him I have a hand. He needs to lay his down, so he raises to 14K.
Yeah, that's what, 3.5 or whatever. So
yeah, so he's channeling you here pretty much.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that raise.
All right, he says he figures that leaves him enough behind. If he hits the flop, I can shove with some fold equity. Seats 7 and 8 fold, and a short stack in seat 9 moves all in with his last 11K. All right?
Yeah.
In fact, actually, just peachy is what Cornell says. Now, he said he's been abusing this guy at the previous table as I was on his immediate left. I kept raising him out of the blinds, keeping him from seeing flops, and he grunts and moans and folds to me. But he said, I absolutely hated the call because it gives a big stack even more incentive to play the hand.
Yeah.
Very true, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Because now you got folks in there, so, I mean, you got money in there, so you got a small pocket pair and you got the chips to play with, you know, it's going to be harder to fold it. So the blinds fold, and he gets back to Mr. Uber Spack. Mr. Uberstack, who smooth calls. Not calls, smooth calls.
Oh, see, now that's not right. You should never tell me when someone smooth calls. Because that means they're going to win the hand. I don't even have to think about it now. I know who's going to win the hand.
Tipping you off,
man. We are not winning the hand. That's a poker tell. When you tell me, smooth calls.
All right, Cornell says great, and then size. There is 45K in the pot. We have 32K behind. Three players, one all in. Flop comes 10 of diamonds, deuce of hearts, king of diamonds.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. You know, I mean, the... oh, man.
Here's the thing. We wanted the guy to fold, right?
Right.
Didn't happen. If he didn't fold, at least we want to hit the flop somehow.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about how you go broke with top pair, top kicker all the time. But in this situation, the best thing that could happen is getting the guy to fold. The second best thing that could happen is hitting a piece of the flop that we're comfortable with.
Now, here's the thing. We don't know how this guy plays, right? We have no idea. That's what you're saying.
We've never, ever even seen.
All right. Well, I think we're last to act. So before I say anything, I want to see what the other guys do.
Okay. Mr. Uberstack proceeds to lead out and bet 15K. And remember, the other guy's already all in. So it's essentially heads up from here out. Okay. He bets 15K into me. Exclamation point. How dare he, Cornell says. I raise pre-flop and I have top pair, top kicker with backdoor straight and flush draws. What could he limp with under the gun, smooth call, and now lead out?
I think Cornell doesn't know what smooth call means. So now that he said it again, now I can't guarantee that the Uberstack wins because you know that wasn't. It's not a smooth call unless you know that the guy ends up winning the hand. That's why he smooth called. So. Well, all right, so he's asking that question now? He's asking what kind of hands could do that?
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously he's asking after.
Okay, well, it could be aces.
It's not live going on right now, so.
It could be aces, but right. I don't think it is. Hands that fit there that would enable someone to bet out after limping and calling a raise could be King 10, you know, suited like King 10 of hearts with a heart there. Oh, no, I guess he got the King of hearts in our hand, so King 10 of spades or something like that. Could be pocket tens, but I don't think so. I don't think he'd limp with tens. Could be pocket deuces. He would limp with deuces, maybe. And that's how he got his big stack, was, you know, doing stuff like that. So that could be a possibility. Could be pocket kings, and he's afraid of the draw heavy board and the straight heavy board. You never know. But the odds of him, the case king coming out, very rare. And like I said, he could have aces, but since we have an ace, it's rare that he has two aces in his hand and would bet out. I would say that he has like king, he has two pair of kings and tens maybe, or maybe he has queen jack suited, maybe queen jack of diamond. No, that'd be just too incredible. So for him to bet out here, it would have to be like king queen, ace king like we have, or king ten, something like that. Those are the hands that I think he could limp with king queen. You know, I don't know. He could limp with that. But King 10 is a hand that somebody, if you don't know how they play and they don't play really well, might consider limping with and calling a raise with. So I'll put the guy on, like, Kings and 10s or King Queen.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to have to tend to agree with you here. Here's the weird thing is that there's two diamonds out there. So if this guy's going to bet, and we raise preflop, so why not check and let us bet and then brutalize us. So what that means to me is that he doesn't want this to go further.
Yeah.
So he's got to be scared of the diamonds, I would think, right?
So he's got a made hand at this point, then, is what you're saying.
So he's got a made hand.
Him. Yeah.
So we're in this pickle of having a made hand that probably is not as good as him. If we're lucky, we're tied with him.
Right.
You know, he's got ace king too. So we're behind. But, oh boy, in 15 we got 45 and we got 32K behind, so we can't really call, right?
No, it's either shove or fold.
Shove or fold, right?
You know what, I'm in the money, and I've got dead money in there, I think, with that other shover.
Right.
And I don't see myself getting away from this hand, really, at this point in this tournament. And I really need to have a big stack to get to first, second, or third here. Just because I'm in second or third now doesn't mean I'm going to be there in the end. So I don't think I can get away from it. But, you know, because, again, when somebody already is committed, like somebody already committed some money to the pot like this guy did when he limped and then called a raise, he could have anything now. Yeah. You know, he could have a hand where he was trying to sneak in because he was a big stack thinking he might have to face one little mini stack shove. And then when it didn't turn out that way, but there was dead money in there, he was thinking, all right, I'll call and try to hit this hand. So he could have something like King 10. And that's how he gets away with calling there, because, you know, there's so much money out there and he could literally take two more players out and have an insurmountable lead. So, I agree with you. I think he's hit this hand pretty hard and he's trying to protect it. So it seems like King 10.
Right. So, but are we going to shove or fold?
Again, I don't think I can get away from it, so it seems like King 10, but again, at this tournament, I'm going to shove, because I need to get in the top three and be there. So
yeah, I'm going to shove and hope that he has nothing better than King 10.
Right, right. I'm hoping he has King Queen.
Yeah.
Or no set, at least.
King 10 makes the most sense, and then I'll just take the roll the dice that I'm going to hit my ace. But yeah, I mean, and I'd play this differently if we weren't in the money, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But, you know, we might as well use that safety net, that insurance that, you know, we're already in. And in case this guy's some kind of crazy player that's accumulated these chips by just making weird bets and getting people to fold, that maybe we're ahead.
Yeah. I'm going to hope for King Queen or King Jack and pray it's not King 10 or a set.
Okay.
And then kiss my chips goodbye.
All right. Well, our hero smooth calls, Chris. He says, now before Chris falls out of his chair screaming for me to fold, let me explain what I was thinking.
I wasn't saying to fold, so we're all right.
Yeah, you were screaming at him for saying smooth call three times in his hand, right? All right, this is what Cornell's thinking was, Chris. One, okay. I have no fold equity to his bet, so if I re-raise, he will call. Okay, well, right. Yeah, of course, but that's the situation we're in.
All right.
Two, maybe a call will tell him, hey, buddy, I got a real hand, slow down. I don't know, Cornell.
50% of your stack, you're called, and you know a bet. He's got two more streets coming. You think he's going to just not bet? His next bet would put you all in.
Maybe.
So.
I mean, if he was making this move with nothing, that might work, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing, though. I mean, he bet into the preflop raiser, and he bet half your stack. He knows that you're committed, but that bet right there tells you that he knows you're not going to fold, so he doesn't care. And the next bet he makes will be 13,000 or 15,000 to put you all in. So, or 17,
well, yeah.
So.
Yeah. And here's the thing, you know, if you're saying, hey, buddy, I got a real hand, slow down, the best thing to do is shove here and the guy's going to go away.
Yeah.
If that's really the situation, I don't think he's going to go away.
Yeah, but. He's not going to not bet the turn now.
All right, three. If I can slow him down, I am left with 17K. My tourney's not over. He lets me get to the river for free the rest of the way. Maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
Guess.
Yeah, no. I don't think it's going to happen.
Go ahead. Four, if he bets again, I'm not folding. I'm committed to the pot. Okay, well, we're in agreement there. And five, I can't be this weak and squeamish, the full top hair top kicker in this situation. Or can I? If I win the pot, I put myself in position to win the tourney. The payouts are very top heavy, and there really is much difference in cashing between five and nine.
Right. That's the reason to shove.
But that, exactly.
And the other thing, too, is you remember from Super System when you say you have a small pair and you hit your set, but you've called a preflop raise, always bet into the raiser because you're assuming that person has a hand, and now that you have a monster hand that he's going to not get away from it. Same thing here. I feel like this guy has made kings and tens, and he knows that we have aces or ace-king, and he's betting into us, hoping that we can't get away from him, and he's going to take all your chips. And that's how it feels. So I realize I can't fold, but I feel like we're beat.
I mean, the only thing I can see for calling, and I'm not advocating, I'm just discussing all the options here, is that I do think our opponent is scared of the diamonds.
Yeah.
So if we call and we either improve our hand with an ace or a king or a diamond comes, we can represent the diamonds. But again, even that shove, though, I don't think, you know, if he's got any kind of hand, I think he's going to have to be like, sigh and call anyhow, right?
Yeah, because there's already 45 out there. He bet 15, so that would be 60. If we called, it would be 75,000 in the pot. And if you shoved on a diamond with 17,000, he's getting like 4-1 on his money. You can't fold for that. If he has two pair, he's going to have enough outs to try to make a boat anyway. So, yeah, I don't think that would even. Yeah, I don't even think a diamond on the turn could scare this guy. I know he's scared of him now, but for 17,000, I don't think it's going to make a difference.
Right, right. All right, the turn is the tray of hearts.
Oh, that's good for
us. Now
is
10 of diamonds, deuce of hearts, king of diamonds, tray of hearts. And as you just said, Cornell acknowledged that this has to be a great card for him.
Oh, yeah.
9 flush outs now, and you know, everything else we have going.
Yep, as long as he doesn't have a set, you got 9 flush outs, and well, yeah, unless a 10 of hearts comes, so maybe 8 flush outs if this guy's got kings and tens. But yeah, it's a great card for you, and there's no way you're getting away from it now. So, you know, so we just called then, right? Is that what you're saying?
Well, Mr. Uberstack bets 25K, which is funny because that's more than we have.
Yeah.
And puts us all in. So now we're to a decision here, although it's probably not much of a decision, right?
Yeah, no way. No.
So, you know, obviously Cornell decides that he could be at least free rolling with the flush draw. So he calls.
Yeah.
Turn over our ace of hearts, king of hearts. And one last guess. Oh, well, should say the short stack turns over queen of diamonds, jack of clubs.
Ooh.
Don't like that. But yeah, right now we're ahead of that.
Now we don't want to make our ace. although we still have a side pot with the Uber guy that will get us some more money back if we make a if they make a straight and we make two pair, that's better than the other guy. So, yeah, we don't want to see that, but, you know, we could still probably win enough in the side pots and break even or do better.
Right. Final guess on what our Uber stack villain has?
It's either a set of deuces or kings and tens is what I'm thinking.
All right. He turns over a 10 of clubs, deuce of clubs.
Hey, it's two pair. We weren't that far off. 10 deuce.
And Cornell says, that's right. 10 deuce suited. The senile old man lost his mind and thought he was Doyle Brunson all of a sudden. WTF.
10 deuce. And then calls the raise. See, that's what I'm talking about before with the king 10, where, you know, you committed some money limping with a hand that you thought you might be getting away with and then had to call. But with 10 deuce... Holy cow. How does he play that hand to make the final
turn? Yeah, I mean, we can kick this guy all we want for his pre-flop play, but after the flop is exactly, you know, it's the same as king 10 or 10 deuce. It's really the difference, right? You know, you want to protect against the diamond so you could bet out. And, you know, obviously the turn was just as good a card for him as it was for us in one sense. You know, I can't imagine that we had a tray. I mean, obviously you don't like to see another flush draw out there now, but...
Man.
You know, and he's not going to get away from two pair now with all those chips. It's probably how he's made all those chips, right?
Oh, my God. 10-deuce limping and then calling a raise from a guy in position and hitting it at the final table. God, that guy must have stepped in something on the way to the room.
Well, here's how Cornell sells it. I couldn't believe it. How do you limp with those rags under the gun at the final table in the first hand? Who does that? And you get lucky and hit those napkins. Seriously. But now the trade does give us an additional 3 outs, so potential 17 cards in the deck that can help save my tourney. The river? 8 of clubs.
Brutal. Oh, yeah. That's brutal. Yeah, that's brutal. What else can you say? I'm sure he'll have something to say.
There goes my tourney down the drain. I'm in cash. Are you kidding me? How do I miss this draw? Unreal!
Hey, that's my line, buddy.
Pitchman on you, yes. This guy dodges my 17 outs plus an additional 4 nines that would have given the short stack a straight. Just sick. Oh, man. So we went snow. Anyhow, I can't see how I couldn't go broke besides shoving pre-flop.
Yeah.
He says he can hear Chris now just saying how much he hated how I played this hand. Nah. I hope I didn't give either of you guys an ulcer.
No, I don't think he played it poorly. I think... The raise was right. You hit top pair, top kicker. What else are you trying to hit? When the guy bets into you, he could be just saying, I'm a big stack, you know, and I'm using my big stack now. Get out of my way. I think maybe shoving on the flop, you know, was a different way to play it. And then, you know, oh, the guy turns over 10 deuce. What are you going to do? But that's the only thing is the calling there is kind of weird. You called 50% of your stack knowing that no matter what happens on the turn, you're going to have to put the rest of it in anyway. At least the other way, maybe you get on the fold if he doesn't have 10 deuce or you know, whatever. Yeah. So
to me, that's the lesson here. I mean, nothing would have changed how this hand played out.
Yeah.
You know, shoving on the flop, he's still going to call.
Yep.
But, you know, we're trying to use these hand of the weeks to apply them to future hands that are differently. And you're right. If you just call that flop, you know, any smart player is going to know that you have to call the turn.
Yeah.
And so you might as well just get it in there and hope that, you know, whatever little bit of fold equity you think you have actually works because it's going to get in anyhow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the guy's, you know, a smart player is just going to put the pressure on you on the turn.
So the only thing that would have kept you from losing this hand then is to shove pre-flop, and that's just, I think it's just way too much to shove. I guess there is an argument. Someone would say that. I'd imagine someone may say it on the forum that there is an argument to shove there because you have about 12 big blinds, but, you know, you're looking, if this guy's in the hand with you, you're looking to double through the big stack so you can be the big stack. So, you know, I have no problem getting ace-king hearts on the final table all in there, so...
Well, it's an interesting discussion because, again, we don't know who this player is. We know he has a lot of stacks, big stacks. So, again, you have to assume, until after we see this hand, that the guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he's under the gun limp. You know, if it's some kind of other situation, sure, with 12 big blinds and there's dead money in, I'm going to get ace-king in and then hope to take it down there or get lucky if not. But the fact that he's under the gun, all those other things have to make you pause for a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, is this the hand you want to shove with?
Yeah. Jeez.
Which I guess is an odd argument then. If you're not going to shove with it, maybe you should fold it, which is almost as crazy.
Yeah, I would never fold that.
It's just a tough situation to be in, I guess. So.
Yep, yep.
So I'm trying to make Cornell feel a little better here.
he didn't do anything wrong except maybe on the flop shove, and he still would have lost because the guy would have called, but for future hands, I probably would shove that flop. So other than that, I don't have an ulcer. You have an ulcer?
Not from him. All right, Cornell, we appreciate you sending a hand of the week in, and everybody else send your hand of the week to podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll get it on. And because we did not have a mailbag or hotline again this week, Cornell, you are the lucky winner of spinning the wheel here. But you get to control the wheel. That's how cool this is. It's not one of those wheels where there's all like $1 on it, you know, $91 things and like one $1,000 on it. You get to spin the wheel and stop it wherever you want. You get to choose a $10 staking package from getastake.com or a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. Or a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. So email us your choice, Cornell, and hopefully we'll have a lot more participation on next week's show.
Scott, try not to lose your bankroll this weekend.
You know, I'm going to be kind of like the Jon Favreau character in Friends.
Yeah.
When he got into mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And Joey goes, "Fight's on!" And like 2 minutes later, fight's over. That's going to be me. I'm going to jump right into a game right when the clock strikes 10 a.m. And I will bust by 10:30.
All right. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti Up is a production of AntiUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AntiUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AntiUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.